Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. It's Grammy night tonight, and we wish all the people that win, congratulations to them, and all the people that were nominated. It's a great honor. But we're here tonight. And we're not over at the Staples Center, but I have a great show for you guys. This band and the head of the band, the musician I met a little while ago when we did the Flow Guitar, he came on with Norm Harris from Norm's Rare Guitars. And he came in and played some amazing acoustic guitar work. And I think what he played on the show was a forerunner to one of the songs that we are going to hear tonight. But and I'm going to play that in just a minute. But I want to welcome Michael Limo to the show. It's great to have you on the show and the band. Actually, introduce the band for me.
Oh yeah, this is Kenny Cash on drums. We've been playing for a while now.
Yeah,
and Zach Webb on guitar.
Zach Webb, great guys. It's good to have you here. Okay, let me play a clip real quick. And we'll get into this because it's very interesting. This is from his new album, The Marquee. And there's some really interesting things that he's doing in guitar sounds. This is a clip. It's one of my favorites. And I think he might have played this at the show. You tell me if you remember. Is La Cienega.
Okay, yeah, probably.
Trying to find myself another way. I gotta give it time, that girl is a runaway. Well, she gives a tap on to the man's freedom. Giving to the world, but she don't care for Jesus. Oh, oh, La Cienega. She's so sweet, but you don't even know. Oh, oh, La Cienega. Kind you meet, but you can't let him go. I tell myself it's gonna be alright. But I wonder, is she still fine?
Great sound. I love that Martin. He came in when we saw him the last time. He had brought this Martin in, and it has a killer sound. It's just a great instrument. Tell me a little, well, let's get a little bit into your background, because we never really dealt with this when you were on the show before. You started playing around 11, right?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I've been saying this because this video surfaced the other day of me playing when I was like, I think it was 12 or 13. I was playing Mr. Crowley by Ozzy.
Oh, wow.
And I was
cool.
So I was discussing with my dad and my mom the other day when I officially started. But I would say like 11 is when it got aggressive. Like, I really, like, got my first, you know, Squire electric guitar and just started really going after it. But when I go to my home back in Philly, when I go home, there's, like, my I got a mantle with all the pictures. And, like, every year for my birthday, it starts off with, like, the light-up button guitars, you know, where I'm just, like, and I'm holding it, like, properly. But, like, one of them, like, there's, like, a home video, because I started playing guitar because of Eddie Van Halen. Mm-hmm. So I started, there's, like, pictures and videos of me, like, trying to tap on the buttons, you know what I mean? Like, but, so it started, like, I think I was always, as long as I can remember, I was always interested and dabbling with it. Like, my mom had a guitar, and I used to just do this, like, try alternate ways of just the open strings, like, because I couldn't mm-hmm. press them down. And so I would say 11 is when it was aggressive, like, really going for it. But, yeah, I think it's been there the whole time.
So in your family, then, there must have been a lot of music all the time. Did your parents play a lot of music?
My mom played Kumbaya a lot.
But I mean, like, the radio was on?
Yeah, yeah. My uncle played saxophone. And him and my father introduced me to all the rock, you know, like Van Halen to Led Zeppelin. They were at the Song Remains the Same show. They were there.
Yeah, okay.
And Zeppelin 3, when they had the chairs out and they did the acoustic with the Martin. Mm-hmm. So they introduced me to all that stuff, and they had the vinyls. You know, I've heard, like, Houses of the Holy first time on the vinyl through their collection. So, yeah, music was always there. My dad and I remember always dancing, like, when I was really little, to, like, Phantom of the Opera. Van Halen was always, like, real young. I was into
But it's pretty amazing. I was reading in your bio that at 17 you got a full scholarship to Berkeley. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's not something, you know.
It's, like, kind of one of those things it happens, and then you just keep moving, you know, because
yeah.
you're just like, I don't know how to comprehend that. And of course, like, every, you know, once you go to school and you can't read music, all your friends are like, oh yeah, that's, I don't know how that happened, man, I don't know, whatever. It's like, you know what, I'll just keep it in my back pocket. And you know, it's cool. It comes the only times I bring it up, I guess, to memory is just when, you know, sometimes you're like, oh man, what am I doing? And you're like, well, that says something to me, you know, in terms of, like, if you ever had something on paper where you could show somebody and be like, look, you know, like, something happened here. And but I remember that I went in and everyone was like, don't even, not because of me, they just said, it's just almost like a myth to get one, you know what
yeah.
I mean? And I went in, and I had it even before going into my senior year of high school. So you can imagine what I was doing in school. I was like, oh, man,
yeah.
can't focus on anything.
Yeah.
I already know where I'm going, and, you know, so. But, yeah, that was
But the thing is, you can tell in the music, and we're going to play some clips from this new album, the way you play the parts and the way you interact and the way you orchestrate it, so to speak, there's thought in there. It's not just, okay, I'm going to play a power chord, then I'm going to play another power chord, then I'm going to play some stuff up here. There's interaction, there's counterpoint to it, and I think that's where your music education comes in strong,
because
you're not thinking of it, but it has a big impact on what you're doing.
Yeah, I think one of the things I've always felt was important with guitar, and especially on this record, it's not like Eruption, where you hear and you're like, well, obviously that's a heavy guitar record, you know what I mean? And it's, but this is more in the subtleties of just placing parts, creating a song, and building the whole thing as a, like, that's kind of one of the things I liked about Jimmy Page and stuff, is just, like, he made the whole world, you know, with multiple guitars, even though live he's playing by himself, but you could kind of put the pieces together, and that was the focus of this record, which all started a lot with a loop pedal, and you know, so yeah, that was kind of the focus of
this
record.
Well, one of the things I noticed on this album is it's very song oriented. Obviously,
yes.
It's the song. They're singing, and everything, the guitars work around the song, which is an interesting. I think it should be. It makes a good show, because a lot of people don't really know how to use. You know, there's a lot of lead players that just know how to just play and blow and do some really great stuff.
Yeah, go to Berkeley.
But at the same time, to make it work, where you're doing stuff that complements the voice, I've had a couple of like folk singers that have been on and talked about that, because I think just as important as playing great leads and you know, be a real good improv guy, you need to know how to accompany, and there's an art to guitar as an accompaniment. You know, like rhythm guitar in big band in the old days when I was in school, my teacher Duke Miller talked about that. That was the timekeeper back then. The drums did they did the splashes and the zings and all that stuff, but it was the rhythm guitar that kept time. Whereas in rock, the drummer became more the timekeeper and the beat.
Right.
You know, and I remember my teacher Duke Miller said, "You don't hear the guitar, but you notice it when it drops out." You know, because he's just playing a little comp thing and very simple thing, but it keeps it together. And when you lose that track, it just falls apart. It's like it's the glue that keeps it together. And there's an art to that. And what I want to do is I'm going to go ahead and play a clip. I think this one's a good one too. I'm going to play. I edited two pieces together of the song. There's more to these songs, so I tried to show the parts where the guitar parts are, and you're going to hear vocals in here. But this is a very vocal album. But I want to let you guys know that I did. You'll see if you can hear the edit. But okay. This kind of shows you some of the different layers of the guitars. This is called "Breaking My Heart." Now that's a lot of guitars in there. I'm hearing at least five or six that I can discern are playing there.
That's actually, for starters, that's my favorite part of the record, that outro. And it started the song. I had the song, and it started on just a line six loop pedal. I had a beat that, you know, is one of those pedals with the beat made into it. And I think I started just with the, you know, the main riff where it starts, just the. And I, you know, kind of had that going. And then I started going off of that, which turned into the first part, which is the duet. So if you want to play that part.
Okay.
So it's like.
Okay.
You just start building from there. And then I started doing the lead.
If you want to. Or, you want to take the chords?
So while that kept going, so that we are at two now.
Right.
And then I was at a.
Well, you're doubling that opening guitar. That's so there's two there and three.
harmonize that with a bend kind of. And all those parts just started building, and I was, you know, sitting in bed. That's usually where I write a lot of the songs, and it just, I had my headphones on, and it turned into this, like, symphony of just
right.
Guitars.
Well, that's what I was talking about. How you put, and they all fit, and they are kind of counterpunctal to each of the, you know, the parts play against each other. The first lead that you're playing, that clean type lead, that's acoustic or is that electric?
You're talking about this one,
No. Da, da, da.
That's actually a. I believe I had that going through my Plexi, and I had the Jazzmaster, and I used a. What are those? You know, those, it was the more manufactured version of the Klon pedal.
Mm-hmm.
So I had it like a very low gain, so it sounds.
It sounds really clean. Yeah, it almost sounded like a slide.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and actually, I had the amp loud enough where I don't even think on that I picked the whole thing. I think I was just more like a.
Yeah, it sounds
like a slide, so it's just, you kind of get the feedback, and then it just ends up on the same tone for the bend.
Now the distorted stuff, was that the Jazzmaster or was that the Strat?
That was the Jazzmaster mostly.
And that's the Plexi, or are you using a pedal?
Plexi, yeah.
Are you just cranking the amp up?
Some of them it was just cranked direct, and then some of them. This is funny. This gets a lot of people, but I used a DS1 in front of what's called a honeybee. It's barefoot effects, and it kind of counteracts, like, you know, the thinness, so it kind of bulks it up. But that amp was definitely dimed. Actually, funny story is. It's called the Marquee because of the Sunset Marquee in Hollywood, West Hollywood. And we were recording in the basement. That's where we recorded. And the amp was so loud that the people at the front desk came down. They're like, look, people are trying to sleep in the hotel. We can hear your amp.
So you set up to record there, or is there actually a studio?
There's a studio. It's called Nightbird Studios.
Oh, okay.
In the basement. And actually, I think they're used. I don't think it was always Nightbird, but I think they always had a studio, from what I've read. And it's run by this guy Jed Lieber, who's a great guy, and he was gave us a just the go ahead to get in there and. It's right in the basement. It's funny, and it's just crazy stories all the time. People coming down, in and out, just characters. And but it's because I think the good vibes of that place, because it was kind of like, a home for me, just bled itself into the record. And,
mm-hmm.
It was a really great process, and it was just funny though that people coming down and like, your amp's so loud, we can hear you upstairs. I was like, oh boy.
Now, the acoustic guitars, was the Martins, or did you use any other acoustic guitars?
I had a Taylor I was using from a friend also, but mostly this Martin, because this Martin's very, it's just equal, even from string to string, so I get a very, like, rhythmic, kind of like a, you know, especially on the... right in the pocket.
What model Martin is that?
This one's like a, I think they call it the OMC Aura. And, they were just, you know, the ones that they were selling at, like, the Sam Ashes and Guitar Centers. But
is that mahogany or rosewood back?
That's a good question. I should
know
that.
I can't tell. I mean, it looks like rosewood, but it's lighter. It's almost the same color as the neck, which is mahogany.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean...
This one I
since you have it there, I'm going to take a picture of it.
Oh yeah, take a picture.
I'm going to take a picture of that. That's just too beautiful. There we go.
Yeah, I picked this one out with my my uncle in Philadelphia, and we went through a bunch of guitars, and this one, just like as soon as we picked it up, we're like, that is different than any other thing we've played.
It's got a tone.
Yeah,
of its
something
own.
Something
it's
in
really
it, you
nice.
Know. And I found that's the way to, you know, just like anything else, that's the way to find them. It's just one after another. Like I showed you my blue Strat out there. My dad and I probably went through just trying. We had like Strats all, you know, leaning against the amps on the stands. They were everywhere. And we're like, this one is possessed. You know what I mean? So you just got to keep searching. And this one, for whatever reason, you know, I've played older ones. I've played, ones that are, higher end, and this one has just really, really done the job for me.
Well, let me play another clip. I'm going to play Fire, which has a pretty thick texture.
Yeah.
And then let's go into some of the gear, what you used on the album. I think that'll kind of set it up, because that's very electric. There's a lot
Yeah, this of was, I think, the one we got in trouble.
Okay, so here's the song that got the complaint. This is Fire. Check this out. Like good feedback.
Yes, I call that Godzilla.
Now, how many guitars are you using there?
That one, I want it. There. Well, you can hear the feedback going out. So there's definitely like I think we did about maybe three or four. I mean, I doubled. We doubled almost everything because we were getting a very open sound, you know, and being able to pan them. But there's two guitar parts, main guitar parts in that song. In terms of like what you would need live, I mean, there's the chord, you know, and then we have just one other riff, just doing the. So I would say there's probably four, meaning two that are doubled.
Right. Now I pulled the clip at the end where all the guitars came in. There's actually there's singing and there's stuff.
Yeah.
So I just want to mention that this is the end of it.
Yeah.
But it's very cool. It's very cool what you're doing there. Now, that's all the Marshall, or did you use any other amps?
I used mostly the Marshall, just because I was, at the time, we were playing as a three-piece, and that was just filling all the space, you know what I mean? And I was using Fenders for certain things. I have a Pro Reverb, it's a 66, and I used that on a couple things, but mostly was the Marshall. And also, actually a really cool thing, one of the sessions before, the day before, Nile Rodgers was in, and he left like a Fender, which was like, they call it Blessed by Dumble, and we used that on some of the cleaner stuff, which was just, you know, mind-blowing. You're like, I gotta see it, I gotta say bye now. But mostly it was the Marshall, and we tried different things, but I felt like... I don't know, you know, Marshalls, especially the half stacks and stuff now, you don't see as much of them with the younger bands. One, because of obviously getting it around town, and also, you know, finding people. I think it takes a different style to be able to control them and play them. And not saying one's better than the other, but, you know, Fender, you can, it's more true to the clean, and you don't have to kind of tame it as much. Where the Marshall, I felt like, on these recordings was essential to getting that big sound, and we just had to stick with that, I think, for the most part.
Yeah. Now, the Fenders, you have to, if you have a good overdrive, you can make them nasty.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
But the thing I notice with Fenders is when you overdrive, I used to use this little Hawk preamp that would put out like plus 18 dB into the thing. It just, in my deluxe, I would get all sorts of harmonics.
Oh, I'm sure.
When it's feedbacking and stuff, you get those really cool things. Like even Hendrix used to get, he would like hold a note and all of a sudden,
it just
either
sings.
Octave up, it just comes out these harmonics that are just killer. The Marshall can do it, but it's easier on the Fender. I just had it.
Yeah. I definitely, like I said, I think the thing that I, like I said in the first place, was the fact that we were a trio at the time, and it was just the low end, you know, that the Marshall was giving me, that which was really doing it for those recordings. But funny enough, to what you say about the Fenders, that's kind of what I've been using lately. A lot of my Pro, especially because we're using two guitars, because as we started playing this record out, we realized there's a lot of space to fill. And so
yeah, I was going to ask you that was my next question. How are you going to do this live?
So we, like I said, the project started, you know, trying to I was trying to find my sound and what I wanted to do. And so I was navigating through rhythm sections, you know, bass players, drummers, and mostly drummers. We were just going through them like crazy, Spinal Tap. And but yeah, we just I don't know. We just ended up realizing that, and my, you know, my dad came out and they saw us at the Whiskey, and I realized that the music, you know, I wanted to keep it true to guitar, but then I realized I was just as much of a composer on all fronts,
right,
in terms of creating other guitar parts, and I was hearing stuff even for bass sometimes, or keys, especially keyboards. I was starting to really hear some stuff. And yeah, we just started. That's when I started adding Zach, and Kenny was a big help in introducing me to people like Zach. And we have another friend, his name's Steven Scar. He's been helping us on keyboards. So,
are there any keyboards on the album?
This record, yes. And there's a lot on our the new recordings we're working on. But All Right has a synth on it. Actually, shockingly, the one that I thought would really, when I think about it, would have had keyboards on it, but didn't, was Break My Heart.
Mm-hmm.
But La Cienega also has organ and piano.
Oh, okay.
And we had a friend come in, this guy JT, is John Thomas, played on a bunch of great records. He's unbelievable. But he came in and helped us on La Cienega. And yeah, so we, you know, lesson learned, you know, if you want to, you know, play out there and, you know, people don't like this word, but compete with other acts and sound as good as you can, you know, you need those parts. You can't leave stuff to imagination. And so that was a big thing that I've been working on probably since towards the end of last year, leading into this year. I've been adding things. I mean, we're playing all of our shows lately, at least four, but a lot of times five piece. And it's about the looping guitars, you know, and having the keyboard. And
how are you doing the looping? Because those are songs, they change. Or
Looping meaning Zach, I have Zach play. Sometimes it's funny. I have him literally play the same riff the whole time. And it's like a lot of the songs started with, like I said, with me in a loop. Like this All Right just has this riff that goes the whole time. Literally, he doesn't do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just create the chord progression around it. So that's, and I it was kind of a pain at first because I'm thinking to myself, like, wow, I'm going to get a guy just to, you know, all night. And, but I realized how essential it was. And so we've just been working out the parts that way. And the keys we use more as like a kind of to squeeze everything together.
So you do have a keyboardist playing?
Yes,
right,
we've been using one for the shows recently.
Now, let's talk about the two setups. So what are you using now for the live? Because you have a gig coming up on Thursday at the Viper Room, right?
Yes.
So what are you guys going to use? Let's do a rundown of your equipment. I'm curious what you're doing to emulate what was on the album.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I was a different style of guitar player before I met Mike. And like he said, he was using that Honeybee to kind of beef things up, and he's got the DS1. And I kind of emulated kind of a similar thing with that.
Where were you coming from, your type of playing? How were you different?
I have a Fender Supersonic amp, and I was using the distortion out of that for a long time, just the one that's already on the amp. And then I started using the Ibanez Tube Screamer a lot, and I also have an OCD pedal, the distortion pedal. And that kind of emulates the same thing with the Honey Bee, like beefing it up with the Tube Screamer. And then the OCD really adds it when we have like the really heavily distorted stuff.
Mm-hmm. So you're using a Fender, so you're both using Fenders.
Yeah.
Which will give you kind of a similar sound.
A lot of the time we both use Fender guitars too.
Yeah, well, that was a funny thing in terms of trying to figure out how to have some, you know, Zach emulate some of the other secondary parts. We went through probably five guitars.
Yeah.
It must have been five because we just jinxed each other. And
was tuning.
Yeah, tuning and just trying to get the guitars dynamic, because you go from Breaking My Heart to Fire, and, you know, it's fire and water, basically. And we ended up lately, I mean, we tried a Les Paul, which we use on certain things. I think the winners, too, so far have been the Les Paul, and right now he's using a Strat.
So he's you're using a Strat, too?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've been using my Jazzmaster, and I used the Strat for a couple gigs. I don't know. The Jazzmaster for me, when I need to kick it up for, like, distortion stuff, like All Right and stuff, it just... it's just thicker for me, and it really changed my perspective on guitar. I'd have no preconceived notion about what to do with it. You know, I'm not like, oh, this is what you do with a Jazzmaster, you know, like, and then I play my blues, like, I was kind of like, what do I do with this? And it just, I don't know, changed my outlook on guitar. So I use that as much as I can. It's just they're very finicky on the high frets, and for when I'm soloing, you know, sometimes it gets in the way,
so than a Strat, really.
Yeah, I've actually had a lot more trouble with my Jazzmaster that way, but I just don't bring out my Strats as much, just because it's just my baby, and I'm afraid anything will.
But that's interesting. No, the guitars are different enough where you'll get a difference in the sound.
Yeah,
though, I mean, I've seen people play with dual Strats, but they really have to do stuff to make it sound different, you know, especially. There was one band I was mixing for, and they were both using half stacks and Strats, and it was they sounded the same.
They
had it all cranked up, and it's hard to get, you know, some can do it with their playing. Some people play distinctively, but it was a little tricky. I ended up having one guy take a Les Paul just to change the sound enough where you could hear the difference between them.
Yeah, and that's why also we have Zach playing the Les Paul. What year is that Les Paul?
I don't even know. It's my roommate's.
Yeah, it's his roommate's. It's like a black.
He never uses it.
It's a black custom.
So he uses you alternate between the Strat and the Les Paul.
Yeah, I like to switch off.
Now, are you trying to make it the way your music's written? It sounds more that you want it more homogenous as opposed to different. So you're trying to keep it kind of similar, right?
Yeah. The guitar tones, for the most part, we're trying to keep similar. I think that one of the toughest things we were trying to figure out was the use of reverb I used on the records. Like Breaking My Heart, to get that whole symphony sound, is I actually don't use, for some of those parts, I'm not really using the spring as much. Mm-hmm. I'm using like more of the digital verbs, like any pedals that have like the cathedral kind of setting where it just has a long decay. And I think that was one of the things we've been trying to battle with and trying to figure out, you know, the right way where it's not just bleeding too much, where it's just a mush of sound, but it's also, you know, long enough where it kind of has this kind of sound.
So you're going to use digital reverbs on the amps, or are you going to digital reverb through the PA? Or
I'm using them on the amp. Just my pedals. I have a pedal called, it's a Context Red Panda, I believe is who makes it. And I picked it up at True Tone. I was just shopping, looking for stuff, and my buddy and I asked, what do you have? What do you think is kind of interesting, you know, pedal-wise? And he handed me this reverb pedal, and it has, like, 5 settings. I only used one. I used the cathedral, and because it was everything I was looking for. Like, I was trying to find this certain reverb. It was, like, the way I heard things, and I used that for almost all the tracking, you know?
Okay.
So
you use that on the album?
Yeah, I used it on the record and live.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you're using that instead of the spring reverb, right?
Right, and he's got a Holy Grail, so we've been trying to, and I have a Holy Grail too on certain things, but we've been trying to, you know, kind of mesh the two to kind of bridge the gap a little bit. But I use that a lot on leads too. The cathedral.
And just having all of that go through the amp cranked, it doesn't get – you don't have any problems with it getting too mushy or too indistinct? Or is
no,
it,
I was a little bit when we were playing as a 3-piece because I was trying to cover so much space. So I would keep it a little too long and it would just catch itself. Mm-hmm. But I think as 2 guitars, it just layers perfectly. I mean, especially on that end of Breaking My Heart where we do the – it just – like
it just
sings.
Gives you that, yeah.
Yeah, it just sings.
And you're not using any, when you do leads, you're not using any delays?
Not as much. What I do use a lot, funny enough, is I have a DD7, which I use for like this modulation sound. Because I like this, it kind of gives me like this 80s, like, kind of like throwback thing, but it almost sounds like the guitar's doubling itself, so I get a little bit more
almost choruses.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But it's a little different, obviously, than like, because I tried what was I using, the is it the small clone or the Electro-Harmonix one, the purple chorus pedal, and it wasn't giving me the same as the modulation. I definitely am pretty specific about that one mm-hmm. setting on that DD7.
Well, the sounds that you're getting on the album then are pretty much your effects pedals and stuff. You weren't doing a lot of processing after the fact?
Correct. Yeah, I tried to keep, you know, the reverbs that were coming out from that they were live off the guitar amp, you know, because I knew exactly kind of how I wanted it to sit. I think the only really tricks we were definitely using a lot was panning them. You know, we would like double most, especially on acoustic and stuff, and put them on each side just to give it more space. But yeah, I would say for the most part, yeah, we did not add any distortions. We didn't add any delays.
Now,
really.
Did you in miking it? Let's talk a little bit. If we in miking it in the room, did you pull the mics back or did you mic close? Or
we did both. We did. We got a room sound one further, and we did bottom right, slightly to the right of it, which I saw a long time ago in some when I was reading about old Van Halen records and stuff. And but yeah, we did both, and both served right for different reasons, you know. And then as for acoustic, I think we did two mics too, you know, one to kind of grab more of the neck trebly
right.
sound, and one more for the, you know, the whole full sound. But yeah, we just lots of layering, and but I'd say, yeah, for the most part, the record was just straight up what you kind of hear is coming out of the guitar. I tried actually one on All Right. I tried one pedal that isn't normally on my board, which was the Fuzz Factory from ZVEX,
mm-hmm.
and I just kind of, I don't know, the DS1 was a little thin in terms of on the chords, and I just wanted something a little bit more grungy. So I used that was like probably the odd man out in terms of a pedal I don't always use, but it's mm-hmm. on the record.
Now, the drums, were the drums, I presume you guys played as a section and you tracked with the guitar and the bass, right?
Yeah, so basically we played everything live. We did about, I think, 8 songs in a row.
Right.
And some of them we had to double, like, we're like, ooh, that wasn't right. Some of them were like one take. We just went for it, and it just came out right. And
because the drums have a good open sound, but it's like I'm not hearing a lot of leakage. I'm curious how you're
able to... Well, if you isolated it you would hear that guitar.
Okay.
Some of them, especially on Fire. Like, yeah. If you isolate those, the room mics, that was a... Because Nightbird, at the time, we didn't... It's not a huge studio, so we didn't isolate the rooms at that point. We just put we isolated my amp a little bit, but it was still bleeding. So yeah, if you isolate those drum tracks,
yeah.
you'll hear some.
And you were using a 4x12 cabinet for that?
Yes,
for that.
Yeah, it's a. I actually got, that was probably my latest addition to my.
What's the Pro Reverb have in it?
They're just Celestions in there. Actually.
But are they 12s?
Oh yeah, yeah, 12s.
Two
yeah,
12s,
yeah.
And then for my drummer friends, what kit were you using?
Oh, well, I mean, I use a Ludwig 1974 sparkling green maple.
Maple kit.
Yeah.
The Ludwig. Okay. Yeah.
That's what I use.
Nice sound. Maple.
Yeah.
I just have to ask. So there are drummers that listen. So.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's good.
Yeah, we did all the... After that, I just layered all the guitars and vocals and keys after the math. Some of the guitars we kept... meaning like from the live session, like a lot of the rhythms you're hearing, like the bulk of the track, those stayed. But, you know, like I said, I mean, all the...
Now, did you do anything different in miking it when you were layering the guitars to make them sound different? Or did you, some of them, did you tighten up the mics or did you open it up and let the room breathe more?
Yeah, we tried some things, especially on Breaking My Heart. We tried opening it up more on the secondary parts. I wanted really to get... as much of the echoey from the amp without, like I said before, adding any
right,
reverb
external,
plugins.
Yeah.
So we kept that pretty far out. But yeah, I mean, everything was pretty straightforward, I think, in the process. Because we tried so many things before, and the longer I was sitting in the studio in previous situations and trying to add something like, oh, this is going to be some ear candy. I just felt like it just ended up taking away. So what we tried to do with this process was do exactly what I knew, like already knew I needed to be done. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to stretch it out too much. Like all the parts on pretty much all the parts on the record, even like the five different parts on Break My Heart were all orchestrated beforehand. Nothing was like, right. Okay, we're sitting in the studio and it's like, it needs something, so let's figure out what that is on the spot. Not much of that. And I think that's what made a difference in me being confident about the recordings and feeling good about them. Just because it was like, no, I know this is, and if it's not full, it might be the sound, because I know these parts work.
Right, right.
I was confident in the parts.
Well, it's interesting because it sounds pretty complex. I mean, what you're doing is very interesting, and it sounds complex, but it sounds like the recording process itself was pretty simple.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because it doesn't sound like, it sounds like you did all this crazy layering and stuff, and it's really actually, it's pretty.
Yeah, it was funny actually, even with Breaking My Heart, I remember the guys left the room for probably about a half hour to 45 minutes. I came back, I was done, with all the guitar layering. And if you consider switching amps, all the different things, that's pretty quick. And to have,
yeah. Well,
and,
that's the, yeah. Yeah, you know what you're
you
doing.
You could spend a day, and still be like, oh, well, I'll see you tomorrow because we don't have this done yet.
Well, let me play another clip. I'm going to play Up All Night, and All Right I'm saving for the end. So we'll hear All Right that he's talking about. But I'm going to play Up All Night, and you can tell us a little bit about how the approach. It's, I think what you're saying right now, it's a good clip to exemplify what you're saying. Now you're using some kind of, it sounds like it's phasing a little bit, that one guitar at the
beginning. Oh, yeah. I think I actually, that's the modulation on the DD7.
That's the DD7,
okay. I was really into that because it kind of gave me a little bit of a, it was kind of grungy, but it wasn't the chorus. The chorus, when I put on the chorus, I just felt like, it's just straight up. Right there, 90s, and that's the sound, So yeah. Modulation gave me a little bit more like an 80s twist, but still grungy. So yeah, that's all over that song specifically.
Yeah, that it's a little more subtle than a chorus, but yeah. It's still there.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the only way I could think of it. It has a nice sound, though. It's a good, you can hear it comb a little bit in there.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
Really nice.
That's awesome.
So, and how many guitars were there?
Let's see. That one...
Because you have, like, a lead thing going on later.
Yeah. The lead, I'm trying to remember if I did right on the spot. Because I remember I did two of them, and I think we ended up keeping the first one instead. I think about four, because two are doubled. And, yeah, probably ended up being about five or six
guitars.
But that's another one of those, just like, all right, probably Zach's least favorite. It's like this...
The whole time.
Just the... And it never stops, and I'm just kind of circling around it in every which way I can find chord progressions.
Yeah. But it's cool because you get this like huge wall, and then what I tried to pull from the clip is it drops out, and then there's the drum and that snare's to die for.
Yeah,
and it is that a wood snare? I digress.
Maple.
It's a maple. It's a maple.
Is that the Ludwig?
It's not the brass one. The Ludwig brass.
No, but actually, that one was the brass.
Oh, that one was
yeah,
the brass.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because
that was the brass one.
Okay, because Ludwig's famous for that brass snare.
Yeah.
But anyway, it just that's a great sound, and that's a nice open sound, and then all of a sudden the wall builds back up again. It comes back with all the guitars, and it's interesting because it's huge. I mean, that's a huge sound.
Yeah, that's what we were going for. I mean, I wanted... another thing I decided with this record was I tried a lot of different things, and I just remember I tried to go back to what I loved about music, and first thing I loved was rock music. And so when we did Up All Night and All Right and Fire, we really wanted it to be big and try to just be like, man, that is just, that's just rocking, you know, because a lot of things you can be like, it's rocking, but it, like, I mean, like, no, it's just not like kind of rocking, it's you can tell right away by the sounds of the guitars to the drums. And so yeah, we were really trying to make it as big as we could.
So no, I think you succeeded. Oh, now the you were talking about that you're working on new stuff too, that was more stuff, and you had told me before the show that there's going to be even more guitar stuff, that you were going to focus on more of your guitar playing. But in the live act now, okay, you're doing this stuff. What do you guys do to keep it interesting as guitar players? I mean, I know he's doing these parts, and some of them are like loops. Mm. But are you guys incorporating something that really features the two of you, like really going at it? Or
yeah, I think
there's a couple on there.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's especially dance. Yeah, the new one, the dance that we have this song. It's like,
because I mean, you have the two guys and you have the two amps cranked. Yeah. It's like double leads, please.
Well, even Break My Heart, we're not ripping, but that harmony at the end, you could tell everybody kind of, like, because live it's just like, it's much more just straight up, like, you can really hear those harmonies lead mm-hmm. together, mm-hmm. and that gets a lot of people. But yeah, I think on the new one, we're doing a lot of hybrids of a lot of different things. Like, one has, like he's doing, like, more, like, funk style, while I'm doing, like, completely rock style at the same time. And,
cool.
And we're merging those kind of things. And, like, I would say London is kind of like that.
Yeah.
And, but, yeah, the dance tune, I do a pretty big solo, especially for today's kind of, you know, how long they'll give you a solo for.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm doing, I would say it's a proper
it's pretty Eddie.
Yeah, it's pretty Eddie. I'm going in.
That was the first song Kenny ever showed me when he first, like, showed me some of the music that you guys were doing, and I was super into it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, it's so Eddie.
Yeah, yeah. We're definitely amping up the guitars a lot more, and even we have another song called Philadelphia, which I kind of took, like, this it's like, oh, I was listening to a lot of disco, actually, and I had this idea. It was like this we turned it kind of more into a rock hybrid thing, and I solo in that one too. And but yeah, I'd say in the.
And are you going to give the, now that you have, you're using a keyboardist too, that opens up a lot of possibilities, because at least that, you know, when you, if you need that pad, if you need that, like, solid thing in the background, it opens up for, you know, while you guys are doing
exactly
double whatever. It has that wall.
Yeah, there's just so much more melodic content.
It's really noticeable in Breaking My Heart.
Yeah, yeah.
That pad that just,
yeah, it just
one,
like,
note
holds everything together, and you just feel like you're floating, you know, when you're playing those notes, instead of just kind of like more like a brick. You're just like riding, you know, to the end. And but that's opened up even me as a guitar player, like, in a mm-hmm. tremendous way. A lot of times I'll do things that aren't on the record. You know, I'm doing, I'll change up a solo, or I'll throw in a little lead in between the vocals, which I wasn't doing that stuff as much because I had to do rhythm. I was trying to do the lead.
Right.
I was singing.
Well, it's good that you started as a trio, and then you're building the band out, because now less is more and you can do other things.
Exactly, and I understand.
But you know how to keep it, you know, with the trio. You always have that foundation. You know what the you know, you, there's that basic part that you have, and once you have that, the rest of it, you can make it more, you know, it's icing on the cake, so to
speak.
Exactly. And I think that helps, and the way you developed it, it sounds like that was the right way to go, because you went from that. It's a trick to play with three people with a bass and guitar and drums and make it interesting song after song after song mm-hmm. and not do the same thing.
Exactly.
I mean, The Who were very good at it, but not everybody can do that and generate a 2-hour set doing that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Especially,
I mean, Hendrix did it.
Yeah.
Zeppelin. And Zeppelin had a lot more stuff like you
on
do on your album.
And,
yeah.
Yeah.
And they were still able to keep people's interest. So
yeah.
That's not a, you know, that's a hard thing to do. I think that's commendable. So We're almost. I told you guys that we'd go back. Yeah, we're already out of time. I know that the website is www.lemotheband.com, but tell us about this gig you're doing Thursday.
Oh, yeah. So Thursday night, we're going back to the Viper Room. We'll be on stage around at 8:30, but I would say be there at 8. We've gotten a lot of love from the Viper Room supporting us, so this is probably our fourth or maybe time back, fifth, in a short amount of time, and they've been supporting us. So we're trying to get as many people out, you know, just to
Are you guys going to be playing anywhere else in town or out of town? Are you guys going to tour? Or are you going to...
Yeah, we're actually hoping to start a tour at the end of March down from Seattle to Austin. We're working out with one of our booking agents. But I think also I just got an offer today to play the Whiskey A Go-Go on, I think it's February 25th. So that should be coming up on the site soon, too. Because I actually have, this is Kenny's first hearing. I just found out like a little bit ago.
Surprise!
but yeah, the Viper Room should be cool. And I think we actually might be doing, which you're welcome to come, is a little after party at the studio. We recorded these tunes mm-hmm. down the street at Sunset Marquee and... So yeah, you know, anybody come out, it'll be a great time.
And when is the next album coming out?
That's the question. Well, actually, we're hoping to have it finished by the end of this month. And when I say hoping, like it has to be. Like I want it done. I know what I want to hear, and I think like you said, it was cool getting the songs, and this one has the songs too, but I really want to, I'm like mature enough where I can combine where the guitars are really just going, you know,
right,
too,
right.
at the same time. So I'd say over you know, spring early summer, I'd say it's coming. And just because I write so much too, so there's no I just want to get it out so people
right.
can hear.
Now, where can they get the Marquee?
They can get the Marquee. You can actually listen to it on SoundCloud, which is Lemo the Band, and you can also get it on our website. And we're actually looking into putting it on iTunes. All Right is actually on iTunes. It was released through Warner Brothers earlier this year for a charity, Music for Relief. So you can... All Right's up there for, I think, like a, you know, a dollar, I think it is, for a song.
Files. Now, is there a CD out now yet?
Yeah, we're actually getting the CDs for the tour. So we're going to have hard copies probably at the end of this month and then be pushing those. We're trying to get everything done for the tour, you know. Hopefully, actually, we're trying to get hard copies of the new one, too, and just kind of show, you know, how much we've done since we've started locking in on this project.
Well, we'll definitely have to have you back, and we'll have to talk about this other album that you're coming out with and how the band evolves.
Thank you.
Because after that tour, it's going to be a...
Different.
It's going to change
yeah.
everything, which is great. I want to thank you guys again for being on the show, Zach, Kenny, and Michael. It's great to have you back on again, and you guys sound great. And
nice.
It's an interesting sound, and again, it's a vocal album, and his vocals, he nails it. So it's a good, strong vocal album. Everybody, I'm going to leave us with the infamous clip. All Right, that we were talking about. So listen carefully. There's a lot of stuff going on in here. It's a very interesting layering of tones. And I think that's just amazing that you recorded that pretty much very basically. You recorded it. It's all coming out of the amps
yeah.
and the guitars. You're not doing a lot of tricks in post-production. And I think that's refreshing. You don't see that too much. So everybody have a great night. We will see you next week, but this is All Right, and check out www.lemotheband.com, and let me know when you guys get the dates locked, and I'll post it up on the our Facebook page so that everybody knows where you're playing, so we can do that. Anyway, here's All Right. Everybody have a great night. Thank you.